the idea of this afternoon's session is that we're going to have four speakers from different libraries, and they're all going to speak for about 10 minutes. And Frank, I think, is going to be unofficial timekeeper. So Frank here, if you're running out of time, he's going to put up his hand and wave at you. That's what that means. So first up, we have Fiona Salisbury from Learning and Research Service, who's the Learning and Research Services Manager at La Trobe. And she's going to speak about the online reference services at La Trobe.
Thank you. I'm going to talk about our online reference services, which are called LibAnswers and LibChat. And LibAnswers and LibChat are actually part of a suite of online tools that we promote to our users, and they're the online reference component. So therefore, users who need to ask a question and they're not in the library, they might be online or they're somewhere else, and they can just get their question answered hopefully. Both of these, LibAnswers and LibChat, we set up in 2009, so we've had about two and a half years of these using these services. The first one, LibAnswers, is a Springshare product, and we also use LibGuides, which is another Springshare product. And it's LibAnswers is very easy to use. It's a combined frequently asked questions service and also an email reference service. And when we set it up, we had about 60 questions in the frequently asked questions database, and now we've got about 120. The questions are submitted every day, and we have we share answering the questions between our three main campuses, and also our evening and weekend casuals answer the questions at Bundoora. When the student, what the student does is they type, or the user type the question into the search box, and then they click on Ask Us, and the questions can be resolved in three ways. So I'll just have a look at some of the, these are some examples of some of the questions that have come through in the last little while. So when they type in the question, they click Ask Us, and they get some suggestions. So the database tries to do an exact match with their question, or they get some suggestions for questions that are similar to what they've typed in, or they can click on submit. If those things don't suit, they can click on submit and their question goes to a librarian to be answered. And what we find with these, I mean, you can see the different colours show you the different ways they've been answered. So some, how do I write a bibliography or reference list? There was a direct match for that question in the database. How to book a study room, that one went through to a librarian. How to read e-books, there was a similar type of question that they selected and it suggested. So what we find is that about, in the last 18 months, there's been about 2,500 questions typed into that search box, and about 50% of them actually went through to a librarian. So there's about 8%, I think, that either had a direct match or took up one of the suggested question and answers. Some of the one of the things that these stats don't show is that even though there's been 2,500 questions in the last 18 months, there's actually been 10,000 what we call browse and views. So when a user is on that front page, they can actually go through the different tags and look at what the question and answers that are in there. They can also search by category and search through the questions. So there's a lot of other activity outside these stats that isn't reflected. And the sort of things that they browse and view are things like, how long can I borrow an item? That's had 930 browse and views, 48 in the last month. What does on hold shelf mean? That's another popular one. That's had 758 browse and views and 66 views in August. So there's a lot of activity apart from just typing in your question. So LibAnswers is a really good, we think that it's a really good form of self-help. But the disadvantage is that it's not interactive. So there's no interaction. It's again, this live chat, we share it between our three campuses, so we take it in turns to answer the question. And the hours for live chat are 11 till 5, so that's just a bit shorter than our research help desk opening hours. And it's very interactive. Live chat is much more like a reference interview, so there's lots of interaction. And the people who use live chat find it really, really valuable. And when they're leaving the chat, they say things like, "Oh, that was awesome. You know, I was just about to give up and you answered my question." So it's a really, really positive experience for the users. It's been set up with this Open Web Messenger, which is free, it's open source software. So we've set it up on a very almost nil budget. And we have the roster across the three campuses. It's usually a 1 hour shift. And what people find is it's a very, very intense hour, so lots and lots of questions, or it's a very, very quiet hour. So there's that sort of range of experience from the librarian's point of view. In LibChat, we get lots of quick questions, but also questions about referencing or using databases, or, you know, and a lot of these questions lead to consultations as well. I think that LibChat works best when someone comes in with a research type question and the librarian suggests some things, and then they go away for a couple of, the user goes away for a couple of minutes and tries it out, and then comes back and asks some more questions. So that's when I think it really works well. We've had quite a few problems with LibChat, probably because we did use open source software. The software can be a bit flaky, and we've done a lot of tweaking with the software. Sometimes you get rude students in LibChat, so, and that's really not what you expect, but you do quite often get rude students asking inappropriate questions. But we've developed a whole list of canned answers. So it's pretty easy. If you get something and you know it's not right, you just flip over to the canned answers and off they go. So that's good. We've had some feedback from users that say it didn't feel like real online chat. And that's because they felt that they didn't get the full attention of the librarian in the live chat. Like, they thought that it was obvious that they were also helping someone else at the same time, and they wanted, you know, the full attention of the librarian. So there's been a bit of feedback like that. And sometimes students come into LibChat and they just type in their essay question and they want you to answer their essay question. And so we've got some canned answers to cover that one as well. That's a fairly common one. If we have a look at some of the stats for LibChat, this is just comparing two first semester one this year and last year. You can see the sort of stats that we're getting. We get anywhere from 5 to 20 chats per day. So that sort of gives you the scope. There's very basic statistics in LibChat. They're internal to that software, but it also keeps all the transcripts as well. So this is how we deliver our online reference. So we've got, obviously, our webpage. We've got all these services that are available, these two services available via the web page. We also have a mobile view for our library web page, so the LibAnswers has a really nice mobile view version. And we also have LibChat and LibAnswers embedded in every subject in our learning management system. So that, I think, explains. That was only done at the start of this year, and that explains some of the increase in LibChat and LibAnswers a little bit too this semester. Just in terms of how successful they've been, I mean, we've had these services for just over 2 years, and it's sort of interesting to think about how they fit into your overall reference service. In some ways, LibChat and LibAnswers are quite traditional online reference services. But to give you a rough idea, in a typical month this semester, we get about 300 questions via LibChat. We get 150 via LibAnswers, and we get 2,000 via our research help desks across three campuses. So if you you add that up, the online reference is actually about 20% of those sort of reference type queries in our libraries. So you might say, well, 20%, it's not very much if you're rethinking reference services. You know, 20% is not much. But that's 20% of people who were somewhere not in a library who needed a question answered, who could get a question answered. So from that point of view, we think it's been quite successful, and it doesn't take into account all that extra activity in LibAnswers as well. So statistics-wise, 20%, we think that's of value. We also have lots of anecdotal feedback that it's of value. Some libraries I know of, particularly in the US, are moving away from email reference services like LibAnswers. That's certainly a trend. And I think you'd have to think about that if you're rethinking your reference service. Like, email reference seems a bit old-fashioned now, but I think from our point of view, we're getting return on investment for LibAnswers. It's so cheap. It's a really, really cheap product, and it's really easy to use. There's no individual rostering that we need to do, and it generates so much activity. The other thing that I've noticed with LibAnswers, when you look at the stats, you can see the hour of the day that the questions get submitted. And most of the questions, the majority of questions, come in or are submitted outside the time of our reference desk service. So we've got all that activity between, you know, 6 and 10 that is going on online, so that's really good. LibChat, I don't know if we're getting such good value out of LibChat. It's the people who use it obviously think it's really, really good. It's a free product, but there's a lot more overheads in terms of the library investment because of the rostering. It really has to be, you know, it's like a separate roster. And if we could think about how we rostered it, we might get a better service. But we actually have to have two rosters. We have one for our research help desk and one for LibChat. So every week we've got two rosters, so that's sometimes can be a bit of a challenge. But in general, I think that they're both successful, and they do fit into, you know, what is our overall reference service.
Next up we have Colin from Beacon talking about the tech thing.
What I wanted to do was just very quickly really go through an initiative that we've put in place recently at Deakin Warren Ponds Campus Library called the Tech Zone. And just a little bit of background. We established a while ago a Blue Sky group to come up with innovative ideas about technology trends and so on. I won't go into that in a lot of detail, but the University Library put that in place. But one of the things that came out of those discussions was the fact that technology is moving fairly quickly and changing, and this concept of a tech zone based on what some others I think have done also on mobile petting zoos and that sort of thing, technology petting zoos, came up and was put forward as something to trial for this year. A little bit of a slow start. We had aimed to try and get it going at the start of the year, but it didn't quite happen. But anyway, we've got it going mid-year at the Geelong campus. So just to give an overview of that, And perhaps to put in the context also of some of the things that Claire said earlier, we have been rolling out things like iPads to library management team. We've been using the iPod touches for other members of staff to do quick catalogue lookup. The fact that, you know, that the library catalogue itself is available as a mobile app means that you can have that in your pocket and look up very easily quick lookups. Shelvers and roving staff can do that. We had a little bit of a catalogue problem earlier in the year, and that was a very easy way of getting a catalogue lookup out to people without the cost of an iPhone or anything like that to go with it. It also built on the fact that we've been trying lending Kindles for some time as e-readers, and we're moving into other technology with the Tech Zone. So little bit of background as to what was there. They were the main devices that we put out there for people to try out. And it was a fairly simple concept. We grabbed some of these devices, we fired them up, we locked them down on a table to a degree, and had them available in the foyer of the Warm Ponds Campus Library. So that students could walk in, say, oh, what's that? Have a look if they were interested, try them out. Had that ability to sort of try before you buy, I suppose. And one interesting thing is we've got a range of e-readers there because our acquisition staff trialled a whole lot to see whether they were viable or not. But a lot of people who were interested in e-readers were asking, you know, which is the best one? What do you recommend? That sort of thing. You know, personally, I think e-readers are a fairly niche piece of technology, but there are some people who want to use them. So having some of those available was good. Also a couple of iPads and a couple of Android-based things like the Dell Streak and the Samsung Galaxy. Just things that people don't always trip over. I mean, a lot of people will have seen an iPad, others won't have seen some of the Android-based technology. Okay. We did have a little survey that we did for the 4 or 5 weeks that we had it out. Basically, they were telling us that they found it was useful initiative. In the first 3 days, we had it out at the start of trimester two. Just anecdotally, with staff just putting a tick sheet as people were looking at the thing, we had over 150 people stop by the tech zone table and have a look at it in those first 3 days. Not all of them, of course, filling the survey because that's hard work, but they were having a look at the technology. And it was those sort of things, yeah, web surfing, reading, that they liked the ideas about. Some students particularly wanted to have them as an e-reader, but that was probably the minority. But there are obviously some that like that sort of technology. These are the sort of questions we got. Obviously, we wanted to borrow them. Personally, I'm not planning any time soon to try and lend iPads. I think that's a can of worms. But the opportunity to try them out and see if they might buy them was a good thing. We also predated with a few library applications and quick links to some things like the library catalogue and other bits and pieces, so you could easily just follow those links on the iPads. iPads by far were the most popular, which I guess reflects public take-up and public interest as well. Range of questions there. I won't go through them in detail, but the main thing I think to remember is that, you know, you get this sort of question here, what do you recommend? The expectation there is that our staff have had a little bit of homework done and get a handle on how the devices work. We didn't have to intervene too much. We had a couple of members of staff who were hanging around pretty much over the first 2 weeks and could be approached, the more expert users. But our frontline staff had an overview session beforehand and had the chance to try out the devices themselves. Gave that added ability to learn a bit more about technology and be a bit more knowledgeable from the library staff's point of view. So you can see a little bit about how we set them up. Apologise for the photo. I grabbed one of the cheap cameras off the Lane's desk and it wasn't as quite as nice as I'd expected. But we did have little flyers with each of the devices, giving a quick overview, summary of the device, recommended retail sort of range, some of the pros and cons, all easily accessible stuff on the web that people could walk up to a device. Oh, here's a quick summary if you want to find out a bit more about it. And that was useful. You can see underneath here they're sitting on little retractable security devices. That was to stop opportunistic theft. And no, we didn't lose anything, so that was too much. That's all. There wasn't anybody really guarding them for lots of hours. That's just the back view of those little devices. They work out at about $50 each. I managed to put you a table and screw them in. Yeah. All works and worked fairly well. Look, it is a trial. We've had it out there for about 5 weeks. It's currently been taken down, and we're going to move it off to our Warrnambool campus fairly soon. On balance, I'd have to say we think it's worth doing. It's an investment in some of the technology and the staff training, but hey, it's not that expensive, really. And we've recycled some of the e-readers we already had bought to evaluate. I think it's positive in showing that the library's playing with technology and trying things out. It's not stuff people would normally expect to find in the foyer of the library as you walk through. But perhaps the most valuable thing, I think, for me, was that we've had the opportunity to learn about student preferences for devices. We know from the ECAR studies in the States and so on, there's a lot of smartphone access already. That's almost a given, as is access to laptops and netbooks. So Okay, that's there, that's an infrastructure. But what about other things like the iPads, the iPod touches, that sort of thing? So that's interesting from our perspective and for the students. Perhaps the next wave for me is not so much another peak of a wave, but now that they've got that infrastructure out there, how can we push forward the things that actually are mobile optimised library resources and so on? I know, Deacon, we've currently got a whole range of mobile apps that the IT guys have worked with us on and others, and you can look up the mobile interface to the catalogue, the subject guides, etc., not to mention the resources we subscribe to that are optimised for the web. So it's a good chance to try out a few new and different things. The question for us into the future is perhaps will we keep doing it, and will we put some more upgraded technology out there? Because if you start doing it, there's an ongoing cost. Okay, but I'll stop there, and if you've got any queries, you have a good trip.
We might hold questions just for the end. Our next speaker is Claire Carlson from the Matheson Library, and she's going to talk about the review of the service.
I'm sort of taking us quite out of the technology zone and into actually what we sort of did to evaluate some of our customer and frontline services over a period of 2 years. It was a fairly long process because we wanted everybody to come on board with us, and I feel that we've really achieved that over the time. But just as a start-up, I thought I'd just give you a little bit of background about the complexity of what we were facing when you're looking at the service point. So we've got 8 libraries in Victoria, 2 overseas in Malaysia and Africa, and about 259 effective full-time staff. So we have a $42 million plus budget. The staff take about 38% of that, our collections about 30%, and then overheads and other things come into play. So at the moment we've got well over 1,000 plus databases with 3.2 million in our physical collection. E-books are up around the 360,000 I think now. They're very hard to count, so you know that's always a bit of a guesstimate, which we've decided to do. And we have 4 million visitors through our various doors, and loans are quite high. But as you can see on there, that our inquiries are up around the 129,000 through our desks and service point areas. So in the 2011 Library Student Survey, 5 out of the top 10 performers were around staff, which I don't think surprises anybody. The students show time and time again that they value either the face-to-face or the personal contact with our staff. So it's something that you have to consider when you start thinking about your services and the way you want them presented, because the things that are truly valued in there are that personal interaction, which I think is really fun information. Now, we go on about the words that we use in libraries, and I think somebody mentioned a word here about, what does on hold shelf mean, and we've talked about terminology in libraries for years. But I just thought I'd just do a little bit of an interesting thing. That word information keeps coming up time and time again in libraries, and it fills your head with that whole idea that I go there for directional inquiries. And I think that in the Inside Higher Ed, I don't know whether you saw that article earlier on in the week, which was what students don't know, they sort of thought of librarians as glorified ushers. In other words, you can walk this way or you can go that way or up there or down there or there are the toilets, that sort of idea. So 71% of our questions are in that directional non-reference area, and about 25% are actually what we would consider reference questions. But once again, we haven't broken that down anywhere near enough to know whether they're actually known item. A lot of those are known item questions that can be handled by multitudes of staff and the way that we were offering our services. The loans idea, and we've got in the Matheson Library, because I'm, you know, an old unrefurbished library, we have a very big desk called the loans desk. Okay, and right in front of it we have a self-loan or self-checkout machine. So in one of the general library committee where, you know, all the key people in the faculties go along to hear the university librarian and the directors, you know, talk about the great things that are going on in the library, they actually described the you know, how much the self-checkout was, you know, up to 65% in some places or more, and, you know, it was going great. And of course the first thing an academic says, well, why do you have a loans counter? And it's really true, because we know what happens at that loans counter is nearly anything but loans, and a whole lot of other host of things happen in that space. And by calling it loans, you're actually sort of, you're misnaming the function of it. There's just so many other things to do. Okay, so we started on the service point review, and the whole idea behind it was to really sort of streamline everything and make it the virtual and the face-to-face, you'd get the same sort of service. So if you called on the phone or you went on online chat or all the other various methods you have of contacting us, that you'd be pretty well, it'd be a seamless sort of service. So a lot of interesting things came up in that time when we were talking about it, because it was a two-year project and it involved a lot of staff. So there were the main people who were actually on the review group, but every time we formed a working party or something, we involved a whole host of other people in those areas. So it really started to be this whole action and a feeling about it. People were sort of saying, oh, you know, what's happening. So we did have a final report. We needed to wind it up and make sure that we had some recommendations and some actions out of it, and there were 19 of those. So when we first formed the two major working party, there were two, and I think this is the sort of areas that you'd be thinking about too, is we were talking about the interconnection between the service points, whether it was virtual or otherwise. So we had, and we came up with these three concepts about that thing that you, there are tasks that you do or the things that you do in those places form around these three concepts of perform, inform and advise. Okay, so I'll talk about those in a little bit more detail later. And the advise function is often the one that we think of as the information desk, but it's a very specialised area where you're actually adding value to what it is. You're not just presenting the information that's in a LibGuide or on the catalogue or whatever it is. It's when the librarian has that extra input, this would be the best way to go. I would suggest you would do a lot of those things. This is the advise area, and that's the highly prized area that librarians think and believe truly in their souls that that's the most important place for them to be, and I'm sure you'll all agree with me there. The inform and perform can be done by a variety of staff and should be done by a variety of staff. It's good to have different levels of staff working together. They all learn things from each other when they hear questions being answered in a particular way. And there's a lot of perform tasks that library do. The photocopier won't work, the scanner won't work, I can't find the book. So there's a whole lot of movement and action in that perform sort of area. So the other group was using technologies to do things differently, and so once again we looked at a whole lot of the options that are out there and investigating them furiously now to try and get some of those new technology just as everyday part of our working environment. So we formed a framework. Now we don't call it a model, it's not a model, it's one of those things that allows a very small place like Berwick to develop a model for them that they want to use in their library, or a big place like the Matheson, what I can do with a framework means that I can pick and choose parts of it when I need them. Just to give you a little bit of background, there were 9 service points in the Matheson Library itself when I arrived there. So we had 9 separately staffed places around the building. So it's was pretty amazing. I've got it down to 5 so far, that as we're working along with things, we're rationalising and working better on better ways to do things. So we came up with a design group, and they looked at the pods, which are the sort of the little desks that we have there, so you can move around them quickly to go and do some of those perform tasks and other things that you need to do. And we've got this research and learning point. Now, the research and learning point is a combination of learning skills people that we have as part of our library staff. They're very valuable, and some of them are here today, which is lovely to see. And the more experienced librarians, so they could be a reference librarian or a subject librarian, will work at that desk. And it's sort of, I think Melbourne Uni is going to talk about their model, but it's more sit side by side, work with the person collaboratively out in the library. Now, we're trying to get learning skills. Were always in a drop-in model, in a little room tucked away where they could work very carefully with people, and it was much appreciated and understood by the students who used that service. And the information desk was this busy sort of spot where everything happened. Any question at all that came along was handled at that space. So what we want to do is grab those two ideas of offering a really high quality service, but maybe not for every hour that the library is open. So we're sort of taking them off out of the mainstream and off into the little whirlpool, a little pond at the side, and so you can have a quality interaction with our students and our academics or whoever comes along, really. So it's still providing a lot of the face-to-face service that is valued, and then all the surveys that show that, but we're really creating a space for a quality reaction to go. Okay, all right, I'll keep going on. So there's a whole lot of other things, the virtual connections, interconnections group, a knowledge base which allows all of our information to be searched on a database so that it can be wherever you are. If you're at Gippsland, you can find out a piece of information as quickly as you can find out something at Caulfield. So the whole idea is to back up all of that. The training working group is also based around bringing along staff, making sure they feel comfortable with the roles that we're going to be asking them to do, we're actually asking them to do it now. And that's a lot of self-teaching. So the people who know about a particular area, whether it's how to use the scanner or the photocopier, they'll be the ones teaching the rest of the staff on how to do all that. So it's a very integrated sort of model. We acknowledged that right from the very beginning that communication had to be the biggest part of what we did, and we consulted and talked to staff. Everybody who was on that original group had to go back and talk about it. There were articles in newsletters, there were emails that were sent out. And the whole way along, I feel as though, you know, sometimes there were bits of gaps, but on the whole, the staff have now moved with us to, they're saying to us, why can't we go? We just want to go and do it and fly with the way that we are introducing these things. So libraries are gradually going through and improving it and what they're doing in their presentation. And every time I change something in the Matheson, I use the principles of the service point review to inform my decisions about the way I'm going to place things and what I'm going to do and how I'm going to present my services. So it's formed that really solid background for me to make really good decisions, so not just off the top of my head what I thought was good that day. Okay, so that was about it. So, am I on time?
Okay, our final speaker today is Sabina Robertson, who's the Arts Librarian at the University of Melbourne, and she's going to talk about the new service that's been developed.
Awesome, found my
other
pair of glasses.
Thanks very much. It's an honour to be here, and I'm just so excited, really, to be presenting today, because we're now into 2 weeks of a refurbished space on the ground floor of Bailey Library, and every day I walk in, I just think how beautiful this space is, and it really, I believe, is transforming the way we are delivering service and the way students are, in fact, using the space. It's just brilliant. So throughout my talk I'll have these slides. I hope that you'll also find them just as beautiful as I do, and I really welcome all of you to come to the Bailey at any time to walk through this beautiful ground floor space. The architects who we used are Lion, and they're actually quite extraordinary, very privileged to work with them, and it's an example of librarians and architects really working very well together to deliver a space that I believe is beyond any of our expectations. And following on from the Monash presentation, We have also undergone really quite profound change in the delivery of our services and the way that we look at things in the Bailey Library, as an example. We also have another library, the Business, Economics and Education Library in Barry Street, and they also have gone, it's quite a beautiful library too, and they're also using the same kind of service model that we're doing. Very briefly today, I'll talk about the catalysts for change, just some of the processes of the redevelopment of the ground floor of the Bailey Library, the service model principles, the service desk design, the tier delivery model, the front of house of service and reflection, and they're all very much tied in together. Our reference collection has never looked so gorgeous. It looks great. And these nooks, these students use these nooks. It's just, I'm sorry, I just can't get over it. Anyway, look, and I'm not on drugs either. So look, this is, when you walk in, this is an example of a meeting space, and the students actually use these spaces to relax and talk. And look at this gorgeous nook here. Isn't it fantastic? And students actually line up to go and use this and look in between the shelves, you know. So look, it's just... But anyway, on to the show. So the catalysts for change were, and there are actually several, and again, Fiona and my other colleagues have really talked about it, so we're actually all going into kind of change, looking at the changing demand in our information services. There's also the increased use of automation. What was also so kind of fundamental for us too, that several years ago there was a paper, Melbourne Scholarly Information Futures, a 10-year strategy, and in that, it was talking about the way in which libraries will be developing in the future, and also some kind of a blueprint for...